Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
After the hour, I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today. It's my pleasure, as always. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And boy, howdy, have we got lots of good stuff to talk to you about today. Joan Pride, welcome back.
Hey there, Jim.
It's good to have you back.
Thank you. Good to be back.
It's all
during Cherry Blossom Week here in the nation's capital.
Is this the week?
This is the week.
Is this the celebration week?
This is the celebration week.
It's underway. It's been going on
since the weekend.
It's underway,
and I can tell because there's people all over the place.
All the crazy tourists are coming in, right?
Oh,
now.
They're here.
Yeah.
They're everywhere.
And have the blooms held up?
Pretty much. We've had some windy days, so I think we've lost some, but it's been pretty nice.
I've been there when the blooms were out and the wind was there, and it looked like snow.
Oh yeah, I know what you mean.
I mean, doesn't it? I mean, you look out the window or something. I've been in meetings and I looked out the window and I thought, is that snow?
Yeah, and the other thing too is we don't just have cherry blossoms out now. We have crab apples, magnolias, dogwood, Bradford pears, you name it. I mean, it's gorgeous out here.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it is. I wish I could see it. I'm going to miss all that again this year.
Yeah.
Joan, let's move over and talk about the lead story in the letter this week, the credit crunch. And you guys say, what credit crunch? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, we don't see credit crunch. What credit crunch are you talking about? But we also say that most businesses aren't seeing one, as long as they're in good shape and the cash flow is going well and they look like a pretty decent risk for a lender to take on.
Well, I think there's a subprime credit crunch.
Right.
There's an easy credit crunch. You know, if you thought you could get credit easy, and you know you could throw any kind of an idea against the wall and get credit, maybe you could do that a little while ago. But now that's not the case. So I think what you're saying here is the credit environment is actually being operated in a prudent and proper way.
Exactly. That things have gotten a little more sensible.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, so if you are a business that's in reasonably good shape and you do need more money to expand or buy more equipment, it shouldn't be that difficult to get it.
Isn't it interesting, Joan, that we've had centuries of for businesses to learn how to develop best practices for lending. We've had decades, a full century in the United States on how to loan for home mortgages. There is no more well-oiled, finely tuned capital market on planet Earth than the United States capital market.
Boy, I'll say.
And so, but now, look, this is an example of how bad things got, folks, when we just got through saying that the environment we have right now is the prudent, best practice one, and people are considering it a credit crunch.
Right, exactly.
You know, that's pretty bad, isn't it?
Oh, I think so.
That's an example of how bad things got out of whack. So basically, folks, what's happening right now is if you have a job, and if you have good credit, and you have 20% to put down on a house, then you can get a mortgage, and you can get it at a good rate, Joan.
Right.
And that's not a credit crunch. That's the way it should have been over the last 5 years. Joan, I think I didn't realize how much of this subprime stuff has gone on in the last 2 years. Just the last 2 years.
Oh, sure. Yes, plenty.
2 or 3 years. You know, many of these were not done 5 or 6 or 7 years ago.
Right. Well, all the low-hanging fruit had been picked, so they needed more customers, and that's where they went.
To generate more fees.
Right.
I'm not going to say, Joan, that the subprime meltdown that we've been going through recently is the most dramatic example of Wall Street greed. And really not even just Wall Street. I mean, there's some Main Street complicity there because of, you know, Joan, you and I, most people are smart enough to know that if we've been allowed to buy a more of a house than we can afford, than we can justify, you know, we knew that there was something going on that really wasn't right.
Right.
And so there's Main Street complicity in this too. But I'm not going to say it's the greatest degree in history of Wall Street greed, but it's right up there on top. Right up near the top.
It's in the top five, I would think.
Yeah, and certainly the most dramatic one we've got lately. You know, Joan, we saw this back in the early part of the century with Enron and Worldcom and Tyco, didn't we?
Yes, and that was corporate governments run amok on a grand scale.
It was greed run amok, exactly. But Joan, those were just individual corporations. This wasn't
right.
An industry that was basically the underpinning of all marketplaces.
Right, right.
Like the financial sector.
Yeah.
And so, but here's the thing: where we are right now, folks, is I think we should be saying the credit situation now. For Main Street, at least, Joan, I think that's what you guys are basically saying here, is it's where it ought to be.
Right. Yeah, because it's not like we say there's plenty of cash available. It's not like there isn't mm-hmm. money to lend, and if the lender has money to lend, they're not going to make any money if they don't do something with it.
Yep, exactly. And so if you've got a decent business model, if your proposal makes sense to take to your bank to get a business loan, you're going to be able to get it.
Right.
Now, Joan, I will tell you that where maybe 2 years ago, the banker he might have asked you for three or four pieces of evidence. He might ask you for 10 pieces of evidence now.
Right.
Meaning he might ask you for your operating statement, your balance sheet. He's going to want your last three tax returns. He or she's going to want to see your accounts payable, your accounts receivable, a list of your inventory. They may want those things. Joan, those are just prudent practices.
But, you know, in terms of – no, I'm not – well, I'll save that
thought
until we come back.
Hold on to that thought. Yeah, because this is going to be good, folks. I think she's about to take issue with me here. We'll 20, and I love it when she does this. 20 after, right back after these messages. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us.
Way back up in the woods among the evergreens, there stood a log cabin made of earth and wood, where lived a country boy named Johnny B. Good, who never ever learned to read or write so well. But
we're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. My websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz. That's where you can find all the things that we do here at smallbusinessadvocate.com, including the newsletter, the blog, the articles, the show. Is all the different ways you can listen to the show is right there, smallbusinessadvocate.com. And then, of course, our knowledge base, askjim.biz. And we had record months in both of those websites last month. Thank you very much for that. We appreciate you using our stuff. And as you know, our goal here is to make it available to you without barrier. No barrier to entry. If you can get there, we'll let you come in and hang out with us. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, were you going to take an issue with me on something?
Well, maybe not take issue, but you had talked about the, I guess, additional steps that folks would have to take
yep.
to get loans now. And my question was, do you really think that lenders were going that easy on businesses prior to now, or was really the laxness in the residential mortgage market?
You make an excellent point.
It was
outstanding. It's important to differentiate these. It was
yeah.
mostly, I mean, the housing stuff had just gotten where, look, folks, I'm going to make a joke, but it's only a teeny tiny bit of a joke. It's almost exactly the case. I want to buy this $1 million house. Oh, okay, But I don't have a job. Don't tell me. I don't need to know that. I took bankruptcy 7 years ago. I don't need to know. It's okay. Don't worry about that. So where's the house now? Okay. Let's get it appraised and fill out this paperwork and sign here, and we'll have you in there in about a week.
The only thing, part of that I would take issue with is I don't know if it would happen so much. Well, you know what it would happen with? You could buy a $1 million house as long as you were buying what they call a conforming loan. If it was a non-conforming loan, you might have trouble. But a conforming loan is something that's below a certain amount that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac buy.
No, you're right. Yeah, the
and
$1 million example
was a conforming loan. You could have five heads and no money in your pockets and walk in and just fill out some paperwork and be right on through with your loan. It was getting silly.
I should have said $477,000 because I think that was somewhere around the limit of Fannie and Freddie.
Yes.
Yeah, no, it's $400,000. All right, so you got to.
I'm glad I'm here to correct you on all this.
No. Well, listen, that's why do you think I have you here? but besides your pretty face, and so
yeah, I was going to correct you on that too.
I'm sorry. I have a job as a I work at the grocery store. I'm a stock man, and you know I make $18,000 a year part time. But I want to buy this $477,000 house, and you know all the things I said a minute ago kind of goes out the window. It falls right into place. And so a lot of people bought houses. Well, no, there's no way those people should have gotten those houses.
Yeah.
Now, that's the way it was with housing. But now with businesses have always had to provide, you know, quite a bit of documentation. But, Joan, when money is available, when cash is flowing like it was flowing and the economy was going so well, it does make banks trust their customers just a little bit more because they know that sales cures a lot of ills.
Yes.
And so when the economy softens a little bit and we get in this other environment, it's just a natural thing to happen. And so now in your businesses, just expect to have to provide a little more information. And it's the right thing to do, Joan. It's the way it should be.
Oh, absolutely. That's the way it should have been all along.
There's a credit card. Don't you guys talk about credit cards in here somewhere?
Let me find it.
Well, the one of the things I want to talk about was the credit card thing. This is something that's happening. I don't think I've mentioned this when you've been on the show before, Joan. But something that's come to my attention about how credit card companies are doing. If you have a line of credit with a credit card company, let's say you got a $5,000, you know, MasterCard line of credit kind of thing.
Right.
Don't be surprised if all of a sudden you now have a $2,000 line of credit instead of a $5,000 line of credit. They're going in and checking everybody's credit report and maybe not even if there's anything wrong, they're arbitrarily, many of these companies are arbitrarily, without even telling you, lowering your credit limit.
Well, you know why that makes me mad? Because it used to be that you would get increases on your credit line without even asking for them, without even wanting them. They just give you more and give you more.
Yep. But that's what's happening now. And see, and the reason is because they're worried about people defaulting on their mortgages, taking bankruptcy, and you know what people do. When they get into situations like that, when they get into a financial bind, they start using their credit cards.
Right.
For things that they might not have otherwise used them for.
Yeah.
They might you know, make a payment with it or something, you know, run this thing up. And before you know it, they've got millions of cardholders or hundreds of thousands of cardholders that just maxed out their credit card and they're never going to get that money back.
Right.
So that's what they've done. It was a defensive mechanism. So folks, don't be naive about that. Check your credit availability, and it doesn't even mean that there's anything wrong with your credit. It could be happening right now.
Oh,
and,
sure.
And Joan, this is not good for startups because they use credit card availability a lot.
Yes.
And so this has had an impact on startups.
Oh, I'm sure.
We've got to take a quick break. We're going to be right back. Joan and I got a lot more good stuff to talk about, including energy. We're going to talk about airlines. We're going to talk about lifestyle. One of my favorite topics, weddings. And trade, we got lots of good stuff coming up. Stay with us, 29 after. Right back. I know I love you better.
He's the man Talkers Magazine says is one of the most important talk show hosts in America.
We tell you over and over again that you're wonderful, and you just don't get it. What's wrong with you?
He's Jim Blasingame, our small business advocate.
Welcome back. It's 2:34 after the hour. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kipling Editors. Joan, just to wrap up a little on the credit thing before we leave that, I would have to say, and I talked about the startups a minute ago. I've talked to bankers quite a bit over the last few months, and they've confirmed off the air and on the air with me that there is no credit shortage for a good deal in a business loan. But I can see where, for startups,
right,
because of what I mentioned with the credit card thing earlier,
yeah,
and that, so I could see where it would be a little tougher, maybe a lot tougher, for startups to get money right now. And so folks, just be aware of that. Just pay attention to that. You know, these are things that you just have to deal with. And but the good news, you know, Joan, when we've had problems like this before, when we had credit tightening before because the economy was bad, oftentimes interest rates were also pretty high.
That's right.
So, but now we got very accommodative interest rates. We got credit issues that really aren't hurting Main Street that bad. And I think these are all examples of why the economy is not doing any worse than it is.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And you know, and more and more people, Joan, are starting to say, it looks like we may have bottomed out, and we may be starting to retrench out of this thing.
And you notice the stock market's been up, and the stock market is supposed to be a leading indicator.
Right.
So.
The things I'm worried about, Joan, this is off the letter, folks. This is not in the letter. Maybe it'll be next week. But the things I worry about now, really, are the what the government is going to be doing to that. Now, maybe I guess we do talk about that maybe a little bit later on the hour, but you know, the impact of all this on, with the government overreacting, and just to, I'll finish up with that and we'll move on. But it just frightens me to think what the government is going to be doing to overreact instead of letting the market just kind of clean itself up.
Right.
So, all right, let's move over and talk about energy. Joan, talk to us about oil prices, gas prices. What's going to happen?
Why do you make me talk about?
Because I want you to give the fair. I want you to give the bad news.
Well, I guess it could be worse. We do say high gas prices will stick around longer than we anticipated, but we also say that we think gas is going to peak at $3.40 a gallon during the summer, which is not the $4 a gallon gas that people had been talking about.
Right.
So I'm desperately trying to find a silver lining here. And we do say prices will eventually fall and that we might actually be below $3 by the end of the year.
Here are two things to look for. Many people think we've been in a commodities bubble. And recently, that bubble has started to deflate just a little bit. You know, gold's come down, and oil's retreated off of its highs. You know, this could happen. There could be an awful lot, Joan, of the price we're paying for commodities these days is speculative. It's not real supply and demand issues.
Right.
And so we got a chance, I think. That's one thing that makes me think that maybe, you know, that if we don't have any severe challenges in the Middle East or anything that happen, that the speculators can kind of, you know, find another place to put their money, maybe the oil prices will come down. That's one thing. Number two, Joan, it looks like maybe China's growth may be easing a little bit.
Well, that would actually help.
That would help,
I
yes,
would think.
That would lower the demand, right?
Right, exactly.
So maybe we could have a couple of little perfect storm elements there that might ease things off a little bit. But, you know, Joan, how happy would we be if oil just went to 90?
And oh, gosh. Sick, I never thought I'd be happy
thought?
With $90 oil. But you know.
Remember when we were saying that about 60?
Yeah, right. Right. We were upset that it was over 70. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Joan, one of the things, you know, kind of segueing right out of oil into the travel industry, airline passengers, you guys report, are going to have a little problem, aren't they?
they are going to pay higher fares for even less service.
Yeah.
And it's just that they have to take a lot of planes out of service, and you've heard the stories about problems with maintenance and things like that. And but also they are having to cut costs, and that means trimming staff.
Let me tell you something else that they're doing. We found out this week.
What?
We're flying on U.S. Air. We have a trip in a couple of weeks on U.S. Air. In fact, we're coming to D.C. on U.S. Air. And when we made the reservations, we got notified that each passenger would have one checked baggage, one carry-on baggage. Anything more to be checked, $25 a bag.
Wow.
$25 a bag.
Jeez.
More than one checked bag. How about that?
Wow.
So this is new, folks. That is unprecedented in my memory anyway. So be prepared for that. 22, stay with us. We'll be right back.
Well, I'd be doggone if I wouldn't work all day. Baby. And I'd be doggone if I wouldn't bring you my pay.
Welcome back.
Baby.
17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for hanging out with us. And we got Joan Pride, Senior Editor with the Kiplinger Editors, with us. And her website, the website at Kiplinger, is kiplinger.com. It's a good one. I encourage you to check it out and use it to your advantage. And you can find out more about their publications there, like the letter that Joan and I work off of every week, the Kiplinger letter, which has been around since 1923. Still a family-owned business, right, Joan?
Yes, and that's pretty amazing to me, and it's really something that we're proud of.
It's one something you should be proud of, and I'm proud of you. And of course, they've got the three biweekly letters, the California letter, the tax letter, and the agriculture letter. Joan, you're going to have some tax stuff for us in a minute.
I sure hope so, yeah.
I hope so, too. And then also they've got the magazine, the great, outstanding financial magazine.
That's right, Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine, on newsstands now.
What's that phone number, Joan?
Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
And, folks, that's where you can subscribe there. You can go to the website and subscribe. They'll give you a 30-day free trial. And when you subscribe to their magazine, to their letters, you get access to all of the research that they've done, all the deep stuff that they've done beyond what's in the snippets of the letter. So check that out. Joan, of course, you know, all this stuff about airlines and everything, that's not really a concern for yours because you have your own jet, right?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
And or you take an air taxi, you know, right? I mean, you just show up and
I can
and,
do that.
And they roll out the red carpet and they just whisk you away. You know, you're a jet setter, right?
Oh, absolutely.
But that's something that you guys report on this week is you know, if you're willing to be flexible and you know where to go, you can get some pretty nice air travel to certain places, probably not a whole lot more than an airline ticket.
That's not bad.
Yeah, so you guys talk about it. What is it? Some of these places...
Oh, you're talking about a small jet?
Dayjet.
Yeah.
Dayjet
and linear air.
Yeah.
Range of 500 miles and cruising speeds of 350 miles an hour. Now, some of this can be expensive. We say from Boca Raton to Tallahassee can be between $1,663. So that's kind of pricey, but it
just depends on what's going on. But if you got important business, you know, sometimes, Joan, you can't even get a flight.
That's right.
If you got to be there, you know, maybe money's not an object.
That's right.
But Joan, another place that money's not an object, it seems, is with weddings. What's going on with this?
Well, we're saying that the wedding industry is booming and that the average wedding costs $27,000.
I think that may even be low.
What?
I have one question. Why?
Because that's the way we like it.
Please tell me why.
We gals like our big weddings, you know.
God. I'm sorry. Okay, folks. This probably won't be a big surprise. I hate weddings.
Well, you're a guy. Most guys do.
They do, don't they?
Yes.
But why do we hate them so much and women love them so much? What is the deal?
Well, you have to dress up nice. That's probably why you hate them. You're the center of attention, and you have to spend a lot of money, and you don't have control.
Well, that's right. That's a good point. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
And the food's not always good. So I don't know. And you can't watch golf. You can't play golf, and it's probably during a game day or something.
Right.
You know, when you want to watch
Saturday,
a game.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Unbelievable. 27,000. You think that's conservative, don't you, Joan?
Yeah, I think it's a lot more than that.
Yeah, wow.
Just the average is more than that.
And then how long does the marriage last?
Well, that's a good question. You have
think
to hope
about
you
this,
get
Joan.
Your money's worth.
What if you spent 2,000 and the kids had 25,000 to put down on the house? What's wrong with that?
2,000, but 2,000 buys you nothing.
You can get a pretty nice wedding. You can get hooked up. You can get hooked up legally for $2,000 and turn it.
Make yeah, a, you could get hooked up.
I could
right,
do it.
2,
I could do it, Joan.
Because you're a guy.
I could do it. It would be beautiful. All you gotta have is a beautiful church sanctuary. Throw a few flowers on the wall. Put up a couple of candles, and put $25,000 down on a house. Now that's a good idea.
Whatever you say.
Yeah, that's my story.
What
about trade?
Anywhere.
Let's move over and talk about trade, Joan. I really. Okay. I'm gonna let you guys talk about what you want to talk about. I've got some trade ideas here. How are the Democrats going to be on trade?
Well, we ask if a Democratic president would mean a big change in trade policy, and we kind of say yes and no. Because we do think that either Obama or Clinton would go slower trying to negotiate free trade agreements.
Mm-hmm.
But they also don't really want to reopen NAFTA.
You think they won't?
Well, we say it's not in the cards, although they would like to because they have a lot of problems with it.
Well, you know, here's an example of how they're being disingenuous, I think. Anybody who's acting like they're mad at NAFTA, they're being disingenuous and using NAFTA as a political football rather than talking about it in reality terms. Joan, the jobs that went to Mexico from here because of NAFTA aren't even in Mexico anymore. They went to China. They're not even in China anymore. They're in Indonesia or somewhere. I mean, if they repealed NAFTA right now, it wouldn't put any new jobs back in America.
Yeah. Just so folks know, folks, send your cards and letters to Jim. We did not write this in our letter.
That's exactly right. No, this is Jim's opinion. Absolutely.
Yeah.
My audience, they've heard me say this before. They know what
okay.
I'm
saying.
They
sure
know this is all on me.
I'm sure they have, but I want to make sure they know
but
it's not
anybody,
in the
Republican, Democrat, or mugwump who who talks about NAFTA like, we need to repeal NAFTA. You know what, folks? NAFTA's ship has sailed. If you liked it or you didn't like it, it doesn't matter. It's over. You know, all we're left with is whatever's decent about it. And all the bad stuff's already been taken, is already gone. You're not going to get it back. Get over it. Get over NAFTA. 10 till. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
As I walk through this world, nothing can stop the Duke of Earth. And
there's that little band from Texas. Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Visiting with Joan Pride, Senior Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, one of the things you guys reported this week was the how Democrats will do with regard to the governor's houses, the state houses. What do you think?
Well, we say they would hold or expand their lead in governors. I didn't realize they have an edge now. It's
yeah.
Of 28 to 22. I didn't really
In the last 6 years or so, they went from having a deficit to having a significant lead.
Because that deficit, I think, or that lead that the GOP had, I think, was instrumental in them sort of building that majority they had in Washington.
Exactly.
And now it seems like that tide is turning.
Well, you know, Joan, isn't it ironic how presidents... I'm going to write a book one time, sometime about the irony of presidents. You know, look at how ironic Clinton was for the Democrats, and how ironic Bush has been for the Republicans.
You mean Clinton seemed right of center, and Bush seemed like Mr. Runaround?
No. What I mean is when Bill Clinton, as a Democrat, should have been the best news for Democrats, it actually turns out he was bad news for Democrats.
Well, you know what the problem
and when
was?
And the same thing for Mr. Bush.
But, you know, in both cases, no, this is not necessary. In Clinton's case, at least, he started his presidency with both houses of Congress Democratic. And I think that the American people don't like all of their institutions of government in the same party.
I'm that way. I like gridlock.
Yeah, I think the American people like gridlock.
Yeah, but so look what's happened with Mr. Bush, too. Look what same thing.
What he's got now, yeah.
When he started
his presidency, did he have a Republican-controlled Congress? He certainly had a Republican House. I don't know about the Senate.
The Senate went away for a couple of years, and then it came back. And then they lost it again.
Yeah. Yeah, but the House was solidly Republican at first, and then they lost it in 06,
that's right.
I guess.
I think that's right. If you remember that, the Senate happened when you had Jumpin' Jeffords. Remember
that? That's right.
Jumpin' Jeffords
right.
and Leapin'
right.
Lincoln and Vaseline Voinovich, those guys.
Yeah.
okay, so now here's my question, Joan. What about the coattails of these candidates? See, I think this is one of the things that I don't hear anybody else talking about. I've been talking about it for a while now. What about the coattails of Obama and Clinton and McCain? Who's going to have do you think it's time to say it's going to be McCain and Obama?
I think we're getting very close. I think in the last couple of weeks, if you've read things really closely, you can see the tide is beginning to turn, and I think it started with Governor Bill Richardson of New Mexico and moved on from there. I think the Democrats are getting very frightened that they're going to tear each other apart if they don't declare a winner pretty soon.
Barring some event, it's probably going to be Obama and McCain. So who's going to have the best coattails? I think Obama, if he wins the presidency, will have greater coattails greater impact positively for the Democrats. And I think McCain, if he wins, will have not such good coattails. What do you think?
But yet I think if McCain was running against Hillary, I think McCain would have better coattails.
I wouldn't disagree with that.
Yeah.
I think that his chances of getting elected are much greater if he's running against Hillary.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Instead of Obama. But now, you know, there are a lot of things that can happen between now and then. And what was the Prime Minister of England back in the 30s said to his aide, his aide said, "Sir, you know, what could go wrong between now and the election to derail your candidacy?"
Yes.
And he said, "Events, my dear boy, events."
Dear boy. That wasn't Attlee, was it?
No, it was what was the other? I forgot his name. I'll think of it in a minute. Anyway, Joan, let's move over and talk about regulations. We touched on this a minute ago. You say that that Washington is about to go on a far-reaching regulatory tear.
Well, we say they're not.
Not yet.
Right.
Yeah. I think you're wrong.
You think that they are going to go on a regulatory tear?
I think they're already on it.
You think they're on it, even in the Bush, even in the Republican Bush administration?
Yes.
Oh, because do you think that there's pressure from the Democratic-controlled Congress to make more regulations?
You
is
think?
That it?
You think? You've leapt uncontrollably to the truth, Joan. No, that's exactly right. Listen, folks, let me tell you something. What's going to happen over the next year or two is going to make Sarbanes-Oxley look like a lemonade stand.
Especially because of this housing crisis.
I'm really worried about this. And Joan, once it gets done, it'll never be undone.
That's right.
I'm really worried. I'm thinking about moving to Mars, Joan.
Oh, don't go yet.
Mark my word, folks, it's going to get ugly. The regulatory thing is going to get ugly. Hey, Joan, thanks for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you to always seek excellence, not perfection.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.